You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Welcome back, everybody. Hope your Monday has started off well, because it hasn't started off very well for the president. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. This is the Maggie Dawn Show. I am referring specifically to the fact that the big, beautiful reconciliation bill, although I don't think I've ever heard him actually refer to the bill as a budget reconciliation bill. He doesn't talk like that. There aren't actual technical terms that are used by our president. No, a not-so-great Monday for the president of the United States. Five Senate Republicans coming out publicly and saying they will not support the budget reconciliation bill in its current form. Now, the interesting point about this, of course, is that their reasoning varies drastically, I guess would be a way to put it, with Ron Johnson in the camp of it's not cruel enough. We need more cuts to Medicaid and Social Security, with Josh Hawley and Senator Susan Collins of Maine saying it's plenty cruel. We actually need to preserve Medicaid, with Rand Paul somewhere in the middle saying, I just hate deficits. Don't worry, I've got a great co-host here with me this afternoon to help explain all of it. His name is Matt Rothschild. He authors and produces a wonderful podcast called Wisconsin Forward that you can find on the Civic Media's website, Spotify, Apple Pods, wherever you find your favorite podcast. You'll find Matt's there. I subscribe, and I highly recommend that you do as well. Matt, it is really shocking where we're at. When Republicans can't themselves agree on the reason to hate the bill, it might indicate to you that the bill is worthy of being hated for any number of reasons.
I mean, part of it is, you know, are we going to have a democracy here? Are we going to have our elected officials actually do what their constituents wants? Because the vast majority of Americans don't want these cuts for Medicaid. That's why you have a right winger like Josh Hawley all of a sudden getting religion on keeping Medicaid spending. So there is this real question. And if Trump got his way, he would, and Ron Johnson got his way, they'd totally ignore the wishes of the American people or the wishes of their own constituents, state by state and district by district. But I think the citizenry is really letting people know. That's why I want to give out the number again for people to call Capitol Hill, 202-224-3121. That's 202-224-3121. And call your elected officials here in Wisconsin. Everybody should call Ron Johnson and give him an earful. But there are other folks there like Grothman and Tiffany and Van Orden.
Style
that need to be, you know, have their cage rattled a little bit. Because they're there to represent us, and they're not representing us.
No. Polling out today says that in every single congressional district in the country, people don't want cuts to Medicaid, and yet Republicans marching on with the cuts to Medicaid. And according to Senator Ron Johnson and many GOP congresspeople, the cuts just aren't enough. Princess Kathy from Madison says this: I have a 41-year-old daughter on the autism spectrum who is on Medicare because both her father and I are retired. She also has a seizure and fainting disorder and has been dismissed from nonprofit programs after having seizures due to liability concerns. Is she going to be expected to work, or will they decide people who can't work for their benefits belong in institutions? Because that'll happen over my dead body. I mean, yeah, these are some of the problems that we're talking about. And it seems to me that Republicans don't want to talk about actual impacts. They don't want to confront the number of 13.7 million Americans without health care. They just want to talk about cost cutting and deficits. Listen, we're going to have to address the deficit issue in this country. My answer is let's start on the revenue side of the equation. Let's start with taxing people who make hundreds of millions of dollars, who inherit vast, vast quantities of generational wealth. These are the things that I think the vast majority of voters and working people can agree on. Estate taxes used to kick in at like $600,000. Now they don't kick in until like $27 million. I mean, that's an insanity, in my opinion, and it is deeply unfair. You want to get in on this conversation? Joe from Madison, we just lost you on the line. Please feel free to give us a call back. Rebecca from Milwaukee, 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC. Again, that number to Congress that Matt has provided, 202-224-3121. I also wanted to correct a statistic. Social Security tax ends at $176,001. If you make over $176,000 a year, your $176,001 is not subject to Social Security tax, which means in nanoseconds after the first of the year, Jeff Bezos, George Soros, Elon Musk, Warren Buffett, all the rest of the billionaire class, they were done paying Social Security taxes within a second or so. Kurt from Madison says this, I am so ticked off about these early, I'm not quite sure I follow Kurt's text. If Dems get control of Congress, this is, I think, his point, are they prepared to go all out to work for the middle class? I think that's a big question, Kurt. And I think some of what Democrats are trying to figure out is how do we reestablish our bona fides with a lot of people who feel left behind? Matt, what do you say?
Yeah, well, I mean, Democrats should be able to make the sale on paid family leave, for instance, on increasing the minimum wage, on health care for everybody, and free college education. That's what we need. Those are all popular things. That's what we need to advocate for. We can't retreat from those and try to mollify a certain group that we think will help us over the finish line. I think if we stand up for what we really believe in and know what's morally the way to go, I think we're going to make gains.
Yeah, Kurt clarifies he's ticked off with these early a.m. votes in the middle of the night, like at 1 a.m.
Yeah, that's not democracy.
No, it certainly damn well isn't. And GOPers in our state legislature pull the same kind of crap all the time as well. Joe from Madison, glad to see you back. Say hi to Matt. What you got for us?
Great show and great guest in the last half hour that you had. I'd love to hear from him again. I just wanted to state in terms of this question of Medicaid and who's affected by it. I was going to call in because I had heard that up to one-fourth of nursing home residents are paid for by Medicaid, which to me is gigantic. I mean, that's a huge number of people who are affected, and their families who may not be in a position to provide care at home for people. So I just wanted to check that stat. So I did the usual, Siri, is it true that one-fourth of nursing home residents are paid for by Medicaid? And it came back. Sadly, it came back. No, it's not true. In fact, over two-thirds, 60 to 70% of nursing home residents are covered by Medicaid, making it the primary payer for most residents. So let's imagine what's going to happen if you have big cuts there in terms of who's going to pick up the care, who's going to stay home and take care of elderly residents or friends or family members, who's going to do that? Or who is going to be picking up the slack when the workers in those nursing homes are looking at those kinds of cuts? There are all sorts of people that are employed by nursing homes, and, you know, it's a good job, you know. It can pay okay and provide some satisfaction. I mean, two-thirds, 60 to 70% of nursing home residents are covered by Medicaid. What will happen to those people? So,
thanks so much, Joe. Matt, your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm glad Joe brought that up. This is what Medicaid covers. It covers people in nursing homes. It covers folks who are disabled. It covers health care for poor Americans, and that means largely poor kids too.
Yes.
What are you saying to those poor kids? They just shouldn't get coverage. And so that's why a majority of Americans in every congressional district, as you pointed out, Maggie, support Medicaid. They understand enough that Medicaid is a crucial program. They don't want cuts in Medicaid. And yet you have people like Ron Johnson saying you got to make it more savage.
It occurs to me that just as J.D. Vance and many Republicans who are completely out of touch, who don't have the cell phone numbers of billionaires, just like J.D. Vance would say, well, just call up your in-laws to provide childcare, since everybody's got wealthy in-laws who are retired with tons of time on their hand. These out-of-touch GOPers who hobnob with 100 millionaires and billionaires oh, well, you can just afford to pay hundreds of thousands of dollars for your parents' or grandparents' nursing home care. That is insane. They have no idea what it's like for regular working people, and their solutions are pie-in-the-sky nonsense that's brought about because they themselves have never wondered where their health care is coming from, where their meals are coming from, or who's paying their bills. They were born with a silver spoon in their mouth. And though J.D. Vance wasn't born like that, he spent the last 15 years of his life rubbing elbows with the haves of the world. And he's I think so much of this is born out of deep, deep out of touchedness. Because these are real issues. I mean, who the heck can afford $20,000 a month, $10,000 a month for nursing home care? It would crush 99% of American families.
Yeah, no one can afford it. And then the idea that you just find a relative, you know, a lot of people don't have relatives who are available to take care of, you or your mom or your dad or your grandparents. That idea that there's just an easy out if the doors get closed on the nursing home or you don't get paid to send your parents or grandparents to the nursing home, it's just not realistic.
And you talk to people in northern Wisconsin, they talk about this problem. Hospitals closing, you can't find general practitioners, you can't find OBGYNs, you cannot find nursing homes with open beds. I know family members of mine who have been on waiting lists for months trying to get into nursing homes who live in northern Wisconsin. It's absolutely unconscionable. I've got Matt Rothschild with me. He is our fine guest co-host. We're going to queue up the discussion about Ukraine. Two big pieces of news today, Matt. The first is that Donald Trump spent a couple of hours on the phone with Vladimir Putin. We'll talk about what came of that today. I also want to talk about the news-making editorial written by the former ambassador to Ukraine, who officially resigned over the weekend. She penned an op-ed in the Detroit Free Press. She's her name is Bridget A. Brink, and she said that she could not carry on working
I think that's Wendy McMahon, actually, right? The ambassador?
No, the former U.S. ambassador in Kyiv, Bridget A. Brink, wrote that. All right. This is why there's two of us. Teamwork effort here, Matt. She wrote that she could not continue to work for the Trump administration that, quote, put pressure on the victim, Ukraine, rather than on the aggressor, Russia, end quote. We'll continue that discussion. You all are welcome to join us, 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC. You got Matt Rothschild with me. I'm Maggie Dawn. And each and every one of you, this important discussion continues on the other side. Keep it locked right here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back, everybody. Welcome if you're just joining us. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I've got Matt Rothschild with me. He hosts a fantastic podcast called Wisconsin Forward. You can find it on the Civic Media website at civicmedia.us, on Apple Pods and Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts at. We're talking about Trump's phone call today with Vladimir Putin. I have not yet gotten a hold of the readout from it, Matt, but I did read some early media reporting saying basically it was a nothing burger. Nothing happened. And the context here, why nothing happened, I think was entirely and utterly predictable. I'd like to get Matt's opinion. I'd like to ask each and every one of you what you thought about it, 855-752-4842. To set up some context here, I want to listen to some sound from Secretary of State Marco Rubio. Jacob, let's take cut eight.
Well, again, it's not expecting. It's my assessment, which I think the president shares, that the only one who can break this logjam at this point, if it can be broken, is President Trump. He just wants to end the war. He doesn't care who gets the credit for it. He doesn't care who went first. He wants the war to end. He outlined this in his speech a couple of nights ago, where he talked about the fact that he hopes to live in a world where we are building, not destroying. And so that's what he's trying to do here is achieve peace. At the end, we all have to remember that this is the goal here. The goal here is not to claim victory one side over the other or to gloat about who outmaneuvered who. The goal here is to end a conflict where everyday people are dying. And the longer it takes to end this war, the more people will die. This war will eventually end with a negotiated settlement. It will not end with a military solution. The problem is that every day that goes by and the longer it takes, the more people will die and the more destruction there's going to be. And that's what he's motivated by, 100% entirely motivated by bringing about peace. And that's what we endeavor to do here. And so it's my view, which I think the president has publicly shared as well. It's his view, I should say, which I share, that the only way we're going to get a breakthrough at this point after what's happened here is for the president to directly engage, probably at a personal level, and determine once and for all what it is the Russian side wants and whether peace is possible.
You know, Maggie, the funniest part about that to me was Marco Rubio, who's such a sycophant, saying that Trump wouldn't gloat about it. Trump gloats about everything. And the idea that he doesn't care who would get credit for this, you can bet that Trump would be bragging to the high heavens if he got this deal.
You could take each sentence of that and basically rebut it. And the fact that he rephrased my perspective that the president also agrees with, I mean, the president's perspective that I agree with,
right.
He can't even just say what he thinks. And this is where what the former ambassador had to say in the Detroit Free Press. She published the op-ed in the Detroit Free Press because she's a native Michigander. What she said is that peace at any price is not peace at all. It is appeasement. And that is Donald Trump's approach. He is appeasing Vladimir Putin. He is appeasing the aggressor. He is appeasing the man who invaded Ukraine. Peace at any price here, peace with appeasing Putin is no peace at all. It's illusory because it places the entire security of the rest of Western Europe and places the security interests of the United States by extension at risk. It's frankly a lie. It is a wolf dressed up in lamb's clothing. I want to take this other bit of sound from Secretary of State Rubio because it gets a little deeper on these points that we're talking about. Let's take a listen to this next piece.
I mean, they're not critics of the U.S. then, they're critics of peace. We want the war to end. We want the war to end. We want to save lives. We want to stop the killing and the maiming and the destruction. That's our goal. I continue to be puzzled why anyone would be critical of efforts to achieve peace, which is what we're trying to achieve here. And the president feels like he has a unique opportunity, potentially, to be a catalyst for that. He's going to attempt to do it. So in the end, you know, that I think that what should be celebrated is that we have an American president, the leader of the most powerful nation on earth, who is attempting to be a peacemaker, not a war maker. And that's something that I think is commendable, not something that should be a subject of criticism. So our goal here is to achieve peace. Whether that begins with a 30-day ceasefire or a one-day ceasefire or a final deal that's all negotiated in one day, the process to us is less important than the outcome. And the outcome needs to be not just a peace, but a sustainable peace, a durable peace. That's our goal. That's what we're going to try to continue to achieve in any way we can.
Is it a durable peace, though, if there are not guarantees for Ukraine's safety? I mean, that's one of the big sticking points right now. And Trump, when you heard him after his phone call with Putin, there was no stick. It was just all carrots. We'll give you great trade deals. We'll give you all this money. We'll relieve you from the sanctions. But there's no other side to it. There's no penalty if he doesn't come to the table.
Well, and here to me is the entire rub. Here's the piece that gives away the game. It's all carrot for Russia. It's all stick for Ukraine. Meaning Rubio, Trump, and others have repeated that if this doesn't come to some kind of resolution so that President Trump can pat himself on the back, take credit for peace at any price, and say, look what I did, they're simply going to walk away from Ukraine. They are not going to support Ukraine anymore. And if that is the position that's being taken publicly by Secretary of State Rubio and the president, which has been restated again and again and again, there is absolutely, why would Russia agree to any, but why would they do that? If you're about to yank all of the support of the United States from Ukraine, Why would Russia agree to any peace? They simply keep pushing forward because the United States is about to rip the rug out from under Ukraine. It is unconscionable. When we come back, we're going to talk about some incredible breaking news coming out of the CBS CEO resignation, and we're going to get to Joe Biden's cancer diagnosis. Don't go anywhere. I got Matt Rothschild, each and every one of you with me. I'm Maggie Dawn. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome back, everybody. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I've got a great co-host with me today. His name is Matt Rothschild. You can find his fantastic podcast, Wisconsin Forward, on the Civic Media website. Matt, I wanted to next talk with you about really what has been going on at a number of legacy TV and print media companies, focusing mainly on the news of the day, which is CBS News' CEO resigned. She was basically forced out. This comes on the heels of Bill Owens, the 60 Minutes executive producer for a long time, quitting and basically saying he's not going to work in a, quote, news TV, on a news TV program where the corporate overlords are telling him what can and cannot be aired and run and how they may or may not cover certain things. There are lawsuits going on. Trump is threatening ABC News over its coverage of the Qatar jet. He posted on Truth Social. Now I see they are at it again. These sleaze bags have a fair warning. The wonderful country of Qatar deserves much better than misleading fake news. Everyone, including their lawyers, has been told that ABC must not say that Qatar is giving me a free Boeing 747 airplane because they are not. CBS, of course, settling this lawsuit that they would have won because they're trying to sell CBS to a Paramount, which is the owner of CBS, is trying to sell their media company to another studio, and they need Trump's approval, his administration's approval of that merger. It's just right. All so unseemly. And now there is reporting that just came out in the last hour or so. And it's important, this the CBS News CEO resigned as of this morning, effectively forced out. The last installment for this season of 60 Minutes aired last night. This coming out that Paramount, that owns CBS, their co-CEO, George Cheeks, floated the idea to preempt 60 Minutes entire and CBS's entire lineup, including 60 Minutes yesterday, which had a segment on Donald Trump and the IRS. People freaked out, and the idea was dropped. You know, one of the key pillars of any democracy is a free press. This doesn't seem so free, does it?
No, Maggie, and you put your finger on it when you mentioned the corporate overlords, because yes, this is a crisis for our democracy when you have huge corporations that are running our media organizations. They're not into informing the public. They're into making a profit. And if making a profit gets in the way of giving people their news, they won't give people the news. And let's just make this personal. Sherry Redstone is the owner of Paramount, yep, Global, stands to make a crisp $500 million, $530 million if the sale goes through to Skydance Media. So that's why they're, you know, getting tough on 60 Minutes, and that's why they wanted to pull the thing. And that's why they're settling the suit from Donald Trump, because she's going to make half a bill.
The greed overriding any of their obligations as the owner of a media company or a studio that also owns a media company is just so disgusting to me. I can't think of a better word. If you don't know what it means to own a newspaper or a CBS, a network news provider, then sell it to someone who does, but don't wreck the thing on your way out. I mean, Sherry Redstone and George Cheeks and Bob Iger, like, do something to protect and stand up for media and the free press. You can defend these lawsuits. You have deep, deep coffers. Stand up and fight for it. Jeff Bezos, instead of, you know, canning the political cartoons, stick up for the freedom of the press. You have enough money. Do you need to buy more jets, more yachts, more penis-shaped rockets, Mr. Bezos? It's just so infuriating. 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. Troy from Mount Hope, say hello to Matt. What you got for us?
Hello, Maggie. Hello, Matt. How are you guys doing?
Hey, Troy. We're doing fine. Troy, what's on your mind?
Great, great. Real quick, Bezos also killed Kamala, endorsement in the
yes.
Washington Post, mm-hmm. too.
And the LA yeah. Times billionaire yeah. overlord did the same thing.
Yeah, and Bezos yep. also got rid of the, or really gutted the opinion section of the Washington Post and told him not to write about Trump on the opinion pages of the Washington Post.
Yes. Go ahead, Troy.
Hello?
Yep,
oh,
go
I'm
ahead.
Sorry. One other thing, back to the last thing. Do you think Trump would go to Putin and say, hey, this until I get the Nobel Peace Prize for stopping, and then you can do whatever you want?
You mean Donald Trump engage in an ego-stroking quid pro quo to elevate his own perception of himself? No, Troy, that could never happen. Thanks for the call, Troy. 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. Yeah, what has been going on with Paramount, ABC, and CBS is really disgusting. And what's getting lost in all of this, Matt, in my opinion, is the fact that Fox News admitted repeatedly in court filings that their people lie on air, that it's not news, that no one should take it seriously, that no reasonable person watching Fox News would ever think that what they're saying is actually news. When they were sued by Dominion and the other voting machine companies for defamation, for repeating the big lie over and over and over again. They admitted in court filings that no one would believe what their anchors are saying. And one of those anchors that said all of that insane stuff is now slated to become the U.S. attorney in the District of Columbia. But CBS and ABC, like, bending the knee. It's just everything. Up is down, left is right. It seems very, very dystopic, to use a word.
Yeah, I mean, this capitulation by pillars of our civil society is really alarming. You had the big lawyers in New York cave. You had Columbia University cave. Now you've got CBS caving. You had Washington Post caving. You had the LA Times caving. This isn't a time to cave. We need all the pillars of civil society and everyone listening, all citizens, to stand up and defend our democracy and not bow down in front of Donald Trump and kiss his ring.
Yeah, the in particular, what I've seen in some of these legacy media outfits is just disgusting. To bridge to a potentially related subject that seems to have gripped the entire right-wing talk universe is the alleged conspiracy amongst the media to cover up Joe Biden's ailing health, whether you're talking about his mental health or what has come out today, a diagnosis of an aggressive form of prostate cancer. I have resisted talking about Joe Biden's mental health, because that's what Jake Tapper's book is. It's just somebody talking. It's a series of observations about Joe Biden's mental health. I do think that those around the former president should have had much more candid, uncomfortable conversations about his ability to get through the rigors of a campaign and the rigors of another four-year term. There's no question that that should have happened. Any question about whether or not that should have happened was answered on the day he blew his debate with Donald Trump. That was not a man who could be president again for 4 years. I was deeply disturbed.
Absolutely, Maggie. I walked into the Civic Media headquarters the morning after, and I was apoplectic. I mean, I just couldn't believe it. And I knew he was a goner. But it is a very sad day for the former president and for his family. I hope that, you know, there are recent advances in prostate treatment. I hope that'll serve him well and he gets a couple good years ahead. But, it's unfortunate. But on the Jake Tapper thing, I mean, I'm pretty much over it. You know, I came to terms with what happened and I want to move on. We got bigger things in front of us, like Donald Trump and crushing our democracy in the United States. But it is a hot topic right now. And, you know, there's plenty of blame to go around. And of course, no one was stopping Gavin Newsom or Gretchen Whitmer from throwing their hat in the ring. You know, anyone could have joined the primary battle.
Isn't that part of the question is what are their pressures coming from within the DNC or what have you to keep the Pritzkers, the Newsoms, the Whitmers, the Bashirs, whomever it may have been, from engaging in a robust primary?
I mean, there might have been pressure, but, you know, stand up.
They still make the call.
Right.
You're damn right. You're damn right, Matt. And this is where we get to the idea of the framers never intended for us to have a two-party system. And I don't think it's been working particularly well. And I think Democrats would be well served by actually inviting vigorous primaries, by inviting a lot of open debate about what the direction of the party should be instead of enforcing sort of party orthodoxy from top down. I think people are suspicious of that. I think, frankly, the 2016 primary with Clinton and Sanders, people were suspicious of that. It turned voters off. And I think we need to re-embrace the idea that through vigorous debate comes better ideas, to stand as the antithesis of the cultishness of MAGA, to invite those debates, those discussions, those differences, and bring them out into the open and try to come up with better ideas because of it. My one comment on the president's diagnosis, the former president's diagnosis, is it is tragic. This is a man who's given his entire life in public service to drag his reputation and legacy through the mud again, to make presumptions about what was known or diagnosed before when there is no evidence to support it, is unbecoming of any American. And the fact of the matter is that prostate diagnosis, you can have a clean PSA screen, you can come back a year later, and you can have a stage 4 diagnosis. This is apparently in his bones. The man has a battle in front of him. Mm-hmm. He deserves our prayers and support instead of speculation and baseless accusations until more is known. Matt, any final thoughts on the president's
diagnosis? Yeah, I mean, enough is enough. I mean, we all saw the debate. We all realized that he wasn't up to it. You know, there are a lot of things that could have happened. Yes, he could have dropped out after the midterms. My fantasy always was he was going to hand the keys over to Kamala Harris for a couple years and let her drive and see how she did and see how the American public liked it. He didn't do those things. We know that. We've been over this ground a ton. Give the man some peace now.
Yes. Folks, we got Matt Rothschild with me. My name's Maggie Don. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Did you know that there was a state Republican convention just over the weekend in a place called Rothschild, Wisconsin? No relation to my fine guest co-host. We're going to listen to some of the insane things that got said at the convention and talk about it in our last segment of the day. So don't go anywhere. We got Jacob on the board, Matt in the co-host chair with me, and each and every one of you. Keep it locked right here on the Civic Media Radio Network, 855-752-4842. Come back with us.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back, everybody. Here we are already. It's the last segment of the day. We got Pete Schwab's Nightlight coming up next on the Civic Media Radio Network, so don't go anywhere. But right now I got Matt Rothschild in the co-host seat with me. And the Republicans here in the state of Wisconsin had their annual convention in, of no relation, Rothschild, Wisconsin. And boy, some eyebrow-raising things went down at the convention. First of all, they wouldn't give Civic Media media credentials. Let's just start with that one.
Really? That's gross.
What you guys afraid of, you chickens? I mean, come on, give us credentials. What's the problem? That, I think, is kind of insane to begin with. But setting aside my problem with them for not giving us credentials to cover their convention, They had an internal poll that occurred during the convention, and here was one of the questions on it. The U.S. Constitution limits presidents to serving two terms. Barring a change to that law, whom would you support if the 2028 GOP primary for president were held today? What do you mean, barring a change to the law? What? I mean, they have to write it like that because probably more than half of the delegates would be like, give me Trump for another term.
I'm sure they would, and they just confused the Constitution with a statute, which is just a terrible civics error that any seventh grader or high school social studies student want to make, but there you have it.
Yeah, it's not a, quote, change to the law when it's the Constitution. It would need to read, barring an adopted amendment to our Constitution.
Yeah,
it's not like a legislature and a governor just being like, eh. Let's just, we'll change this bit of U.S. code here. No. It's in the Constitution. I'm not even going to give them credit for pointing out that the Constitution limits presidents to two terms. My goodness, it is frightening. But why might they be considering a third term, Matt? Might it be because they think they can't win without the guy? Jacob, let's take cut one. This is Senator Ron Johnson saying as much.
Oftentimes, I know JFK said this, other people have said this, that victory has 1,000 fathers, defeat is an orphan. Well, in this case, I'd argue defeat had 634,000 fathers. Those are the voters who came out to try and save America by electing Donald Trump, that did not come out and try and ensure that he would have 4 years where he could implement his agenda without possibly the majority shifting in the House. 634,000 people didn't do that. So now you start hearing this thing that we've, you know, Republicans have low propensity voters. Used to be the exact opposite. You know, Republicans used to have the advantage in low turnout elections. Apparently not anymore. Just to give you a clue of what's happened in the last two judiciary elections with Dan Kelly and Brad Schimmel, both of those candidates got 61 and 62% of my vote and then Trump's vote. But the Democrat candidates for those justice positions got 78%, both years. Unbelievably consistent. That is a problem we must address because, let's face it, as much as many would want Donald Trump to be on the ballot again, he won't be. He won't be. And we're going to have to figure out how we win without Donald Trump on the ballot here in Wisconsin. So that's just a hard truth. We're going to have to figure that out.
Can't win without Trump. Gee whiz. Doubling down on this idea of Republicans can't win without Trump, and what are we going to do about it? Well, don't worry. Derek Van Orten has a suggestion. Just cancel those damn pesky elections. Let's take cut seven.
What do you think went wrong, or what goes wrong in spring elections here in Wisconsin?
Republicans don't vote, period. Like, we just don't vote in spring elections.
How do you change that?
I don't think we should have a spring election. I think we need to, these guys in the State House, I think they should get rid of that and fold it into a midterm or a four-year cycle.
Can't win a spring election? Cancel the spring election.
This is typical DVO nonsense. I mean, if you want to get someone to say something that's offensive to large swaths of his own constituents, or offensive to the baseline principles of democracy, just stick a mic in Derek Van Orten's face. He'll come up with something. By the way, new reporting in today that Derek Van Orten is what? What, ladies and gentlemen? Oh, yes, supporting cuts to veterans benefits and the VA. Isn't that lovely? I'm not sure if we've got sound on that, but gee whiz. Derek Van Orten, I'll never cut food stamps and SNAP. Except I'll support the $300+ billion dollars in cuts to SNAP. I'll never cut veterans benefits or the VA, except I'll do exactly that as a congressman.
If Trump wants him to. He's such a little Trump toady.
Yes, a complete toady. Speaking of being a toady, let's take cut four, more DVO.
Just so you know, Donald J. Trump follows me on Truth Social.
That is what Derek Van Orden, I mean, I swear to God, people, Matt and I did not set up that bit. He just said, DVO, complete Trump toady. That's what he's most worried about, is whether or not Trump follows him on Truth Social. Oh, the pathos. Oh, the pathos. I think I might save for tomorrow some of the more gruesome things that Grothman had to say. Gruesome Glenn Grothman, some of our state's best at the convention this past afternoon. Big thanks to you, Matt, for helping me start out these weeks. I appreciate
my pleasure,
time with
Maggie.
You. Good to have you. That's Matt Rothschild. You can find his podcast, Wisconsin Forward, on Civic Media's website, Apple Pods and Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from. I'm Maggie Dawn. That's going to do it for me today. Keep it locked on Civic Media. You got Pete Schwab's Nightlight coming up next. Remember, I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me. But it's always better when we stand together for the 13.7 million Americans on Medicaid.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.